Hi, everyone. I want to thank you for joining us today for the Civic Innovation Challenge webinar. My name is Michal Zibal, and I'm a program director at the National Science Foundation and part of the program team for the Civic Innovation Challenge, or CIVIC for short. CIVIC is a federal research and action competition led by NSF in partnership with the Department of Homeland Security and the Department of Energy. We also have a cooperative agreement with MetroLab Network, and you will hear more about their role later in the webinar. This webinar will provide an overview of the CIVIC program and review details of the recently released solicitation, which is accepting proposals through May 5th, 2022. Following the webinar, you will have an opportunity for Q&A with members of the CIVIC program team. While we're going through the webinar, we encourage you to post your questions through the Zoom Q&A function. You can see here the program team for CIVIC, which includes members across the four participating NSF directorates: computer and information science and engineering, geosciences, and social, behavioral, and economic sciences, and also engineering. Within DHS, it includes members from the Directorate for Science and Technology and also the Federal Emergency Management Agency, or FEMA, and within DOE from the Vehicle Technologies Office. We will start out now with a brief overview of the CIVIC program. The central goal of the CIVIC Innovation Challenge is to accelerate the transition to practice of foundational research and emerging technologies into local government and community organizations through civic engaged research. The program asks communities to be in the lead of identifying priorities and challenges that are ripe for innovation and to partner with researchers to co-develop and pilot potential solutions over a rapid 12-month timeframe following a 6-month planning period. The program strives to support ideas that can be scaled within their pilot communities, sustained beyond the NSF award, and have the potential to be transferred to other communities across the US. And lastly, the program emphasizes support of projects that involve stakeholders and individuals on the front lines of these community challenges, including those who have historically not been sufficiently involved as co-creators in research and innovation activities. Each CIVIC solicitation is developed around focused track themes that are developed with input from communities across the US, together with the priority areas of the co-funders of the program. After the submission deadline, proposals are reviewed by panels of experts using NSF's merit review process that considers intellectual merit and broader impacts, as well as criteria specific to the program goals. We'll touch more on these later in the webinar. For the CIVIC program, we ensure that the reviewers in the panels cover the range of academic disciplines represented in the proposals, and equally important, that we include reviewers with experience in local government and community organizations. The panels make funding recommendations to NSF, and then the NSF CIVIC program team and NSF leadership makes the final funding decisions. As we noted earlier, the program includes two stages. In stage one, awarded teams receive planning grants of up to $50,000 to undertake planning activities over a 6-month period, during which they refine their proposals, strengthen their partnerships, and prepare their submissions for stage two. It's important to note that only awardees from stage one are eligible to submit proposals to stage two. For the stage two awards, the same review process just described is carried out, and the program team selects a subset of teams to fund for full awards. These awards are for up to $1 million to execute their pilot projects over the rapid 12-month timeframe. During both stages, awardees interact with the CIVIC program team and also participate in community of practice activities aimed at building a nationwide network of knowledge sharing between the CIVIC teams. I'm going to turn it over to MetroLab Network, who facilitates these communities of practice, to elaborate a little further on this.
Hi, everyone. My name is Kate Garman-Burns, and I'm the executive director at MetroLab Network. MetroLab Network supports collaboration between local governments and colleges and universities who want to support their local residents and neighbors' priorities. We are proud to continue to support the work of the National Science Foundation and their partners as they continue the CIVIC Innovation Challenge by facilitating the CIVIC community of practice. Across both stages of the program, teams will engage in a series of activities relevant to the goals of each stage. During stage one, community of practice activities focus on preparing teams for success in stage two, including planning for a fast-paced pilot and strengthening civic academic partnerships. Activities during stage two focus on facilitating knowledge sharing between teams, including approaches for executing pilots, maintaining meaningful cross-sector collaborations, and strategies for scaling and sustaining outcomes beyond the NSF award.
As you're considering a potential project for this program, prospective teams may find it helpful to learn about the ongoing work of the awarded projects from the first round of the civic solicitation. To do so, we encourage you to visit the website noted on this slide that MetroLab manages, nsfciviccinnovation.org. In the Civic Awards tab, you'll find projects, videos, websites, and one-page descriptions of each project. You can see from this map that the teams are situated across the US from cities like Atlanta and Los Angeles to rural communities in Michigan and Florida and the Pueblos of New Mexico. In our first round of the solicitation, which had the track themes of mobility and resilience to natural disasters, 52 teams were selected for stage one awards, and 17 of those teams were selected for stage two. We want to emphasize here again that every selected project included a set of strong partnerships between researchers, local government agencies, and community organizations, since that is an essential aspect of carrying out these fast-paced, impactful projects.
Hello, my name is David Corman, and I'm a program director in NSF SIZE Directorate. And over the next several slides, we'll be reviewing details, the new civic solicitation, and important proposal submission guidelines. While this webinar will cover many important details regarding the solicitation, proposers should carefully read the solicitation and refer to guidance and requirements within it, as well as NSF's proposal and award policies and procedure guide, what we call the PAPG. This solicitation for Civic has two community identified track themes. Track A for this round is focused on adaptation, mitigation, and resilience in community systems, services, and economic drivers that are vulnerable in the face of a changing climate. Projects are asked to focus on aspects essential for the proper functioning of the community and its economy, such as access to digital infrastructure and services, public utilities, food and agriculture, ecosystem services, residential and commercial buildings, and education and workforce development. Please note, these are examples and not an exhaustive list. Additionally, as teams are formulating their ideas and pursuing partnerships with their communities, they should consider the perspectives of economically disadvantaged and marginalized communities that are especially susceptible to increasing environmental instability and its resulting impacts. The other track for this round, track B, is focused on enhancing people's access to essential resources and services. For example, food, medical, housing, broadband, and mobile technologies, where better accessibility could significantly improve quality of life and community resilience. Projects may consider gaps and inequities in resource and service allocation resulting from a variety of reasons, including longstanding systemic issues around accessibility, economic disparity, or disruptions caused by shock or disaster. For this track, proposers are encouraged to leverage anchor institutions in their community that are focusing on delivering or providing access to one or more resources or services to a set of end users, which may include socioeconomically disadvantaged groups and vulnerable populations, such as the elderly and those who are physically impaired. For both tracks, it's a requirement that multi-domain teams of research and civic partners, together with community stakeholders, co-create scalable pilot projects that will lead to measurable, inclusive, and equitable outcomes. Teams should review detailed guidance for both tracks that's provided within Section 2A of the solicitation, which includes examples of the types of questions that can be addressed for each track. For this round, Stage 1 planning grant proposals are due by May 5th, 2022. We anticipate making up to 50 Stage 1 awards with expected start dates for projects in October 2022. As we mentioned earlier during the webinar, Stage 1 teams will use their planning grant awards to strengthen collaborations with relevant partners and stakeholders, solidify their project execution approach, team roles and responsibilities, and refine the vision and plan for executing the research-centered pilot. Please note that only teams with Stage 1 awards will be allowed to submit proposals for Stage 2. We anticipate making up to 20 Stage 2 awards for this round, with expected start date for projects in the fall of 2023. Over the next few slides, we'll review several important aspects of how teams should go about formulating their project ideas and constructing a proposal that is aligned with the goals of this program. Proposals will use the project description section of their proposals to describe their project ideas, including their vision for a Stage 2 pilot and the strength of their civic academic partnerships, and how they will use the planning grant period to refine their team ideas and pilot to prepare for submission of a Stage 2 full award. Proposers should be conscious of specific subsections in the solicitation titled Vision for a Research-Centered Pilot Project and Civic Participation Engagement for complete guidance on the requirements for describing their projects. These sections ask proposers to address several questions as they describe their projects, such as, in what ways does the envisioned Stage 2 project go beyond the state of practice and state of the art in the pilot community and other communities as well? Who are the partners, academic and civic, on the project, and what are their roles? Do the civic partners adequately represent the perspective of the community and enable the project to achieve its desired impact? Please note that we use the term partners for civic to mean that civic partners are not just being pushed technologies and research for academia. They are co-developers of the project and key contributors to the piloting efforts. The solicitation also provides additional opportunities for teams to outline the strengths of their project ideas and partnerships. This includes information requested in bio sketches, letters of collaboration, and facilities, equipment, and other resource subsections. Proposers should refer to Section 5A of the supplementary documents for detailed guidance on this. Please note, the facilities, equipment, and other resource subsection can include evidence of unfunded collaborations and past work between partners. All too frequently, that section is used only to post glossy pictures of buildings and servers. So use that section well. Please note, there are several other sections that are required in the solicitation, and we again refer you to carefully look through the solicitation and the PAPG requirements in order that you come up and submit a compliant NSF proposal. Over the next few slides, we will review how proposals submitted to CIVIC will be evaluated. All proposals submitted to CIVIC will be first reviewed by a panel of experts from both research and community side, and the CIVIC program team will make final funding decisions based on panel's recommendations. CIVIC proposals will be evaluated for their intellectual merit and broader impacts using NSF's general review process. and assess intellectual merit criteria encompasses potential for a project to advance knowledge, and the broader impact criteria encompasses the potential of the project to benefit society and contribute to the achievement of specific desired societal outcomes. We encourage you to ask the kinds of questions that reviewers will ask as you are framing your proposals, such as, to what extent do the proposed activities suggest and explore creative, original, or potentially transformative concepts? Is the plan for carrying out proposed activities well-reasoned, well-organized, and based on a sound rationale? Does the plan incorporate a mechanism to assure success? How well qualified is the individual team or organizations to conduct the proposed activities? Proposers should refer to the Section 6A of the solicitation for detailed guidance about NSF's merit review process. We also encourage you and your colleagues to participate in the program as a panel reviewer, whether you are submitting a proposal or not. Please note that proposers to CIVIC can only participate as reviewers for the track that they are not submitting. If you are interested in serving on a review panel, please sign up for the CIVIC email list to receive guidance on how to sign up as a reviewer for the program. Along with the general NSF merit review criteria, there are several additional solicitation-specific review criteria for CIVIC, which evaluate proposals, especially on their relevance to the goals of the CIVIC program. This criteria includes the following questions. Is it evident that the envisioned CIVIC project addresses a community-identified priority with a pilot project that has the potential to be scaled and sustained? Is it driven by strong partnerships between the necessary set of CIVIC organizations, local and state governments, researchers, and other partners and stakeholders? Is a proposed pilot project well-suited for execution in a fast-paced 12-month timeframe of the CIVIC proposed program, including a rapid startup at the onset of stage two? Guidance on solicitation-specific review criteria can be found within Section 6A of the solicitation.
Before we conclude this webinar, we want to note that CIVIC invites proposals from a diverse set of stakeholders, which may include organizations who have not proposed to NSF. If your organization falls in this category and is looking to submit as a lead organization, we want to emphasize that initiating the process can take significant time, and teams are strongly encouraged to start the process at least 2 months prior to the submission deadline. You can find some guidance on getting started on this in the proposal preparation and submission instructions in the solicitation, and also in the NSF proposals and award policies and procedures guide that we've referenced several times, the PAPPG. And teams also may want to look at the CIVIC FAQ question on this topic. So this concludes the CIVIC webinar. In a few moments, we will start the Q&A portion. Feel free to post your questions in the Q&A feature on Zoom if you have not yet done so. If you have additional questions as you move through the proposal preparation process, please note that we will have additional Q&A sessions on March 10th and also on March 22nd. Please also note that we have FAQs for the program, which you can access through our website. And please feel free to also send questions to us at civic@nsf.gov. The NSF CIVIC program directors are also available to meet with individual teams if you have questions specific to your project. To schedule these individual meetings, please email the same email address and share with us a couple paragraphs about your project and what your specific questions are. And again, we also encourage you to sign up for the CIVIC mailing list, which you can access through nsfciviciNnovation.org to continue receiving updates about the program including a survey to participate as a reviewer on the panels. We want to thank you again for attending the webinar today, and we will now begin the Q&A session.
All right, folks, that concludes the webinar presentation. And now we will be kicking off the Q&A session. I want to quickly introduce myself. My name is Vishal Sharma, and I'm a AAA Science and Technology Policy Fellow at NSF. And I will be moderating the Q&A session today. And we'll try to get through everyone's submitted questions before we conclude the webinar. Before we get started, I want to introduce the Civic Program team members who are present for this session, but were not introduced during the webinar. First, I would like to call upon David Alexander from the Department of Homeland Security.
Hi, it's David Alexander. Pleased to be here today. I'm definitely looking forward to Civic 2022. Of course, DHS and FEMA are excited to be partnering again with NSF and DOE on another round of Civic Innovation Challenge. It's provided us two new compelling research tracks for DHS to address some of our fundamental challenges and priorities in disaster and climate resilience. I think a few points, of interest for the group is that, when we look at disaster resilience and preparedness, it is a core mission of DHS. We have issued a new strategic framework for addressing climate change, but we recognize that there's a lot of interconnectedness and interdependency, and those both broad objectives and goals around disaster resilience are inextricably linked to climate resilience. So we're definitely looking forward to solutions that will enhance capacity and capabilities to sustain and maintain critical functions and core services, empowering individuals and communities to develop their climate resilience, building readiness to respond to emerging and compound risk, as well as climate-driven emergencies, and enhancing the Homeland Security emergency management workforce and increasing our understanding and literacy of these risks by putting research into action. And I think those priority objectives tie in very nicely to the two research topics and tracks that have been identified into Civic 2022. So again, thank you for joining us today, and very excited and looking forward to receiving the proposals and launching the next round of Civic 2022.
Thank you, David. Next, we will hear from Mark Smith from the Department of Energy.
Great. Thank you, Vishal. Good afternoon or good morning, everyone. Mark Smith from the Vehicle Technologies Office at the Department of Energy. Again, as David Alexander just pointed out, excited to be partnering with NSF and DHS and Metro Labs on this next iteration of Civic. The first response, I think we would agree for both tracks, was overwhelming, especially given the fact that basically it was kicked off during the early days of the pandemic, and just some really great projects came out of that. And that's why we're excited to be teaming up now for Civic 2022. When you look at transportation, our mission is to really do a number of things. How do we, number one, decarbonize the transportation sector? That's on-road and off-road vehicles. And that means looking at things like battery electric vehicles, hydrogen fuel cell vehicles, et cetera. And knowing that we need to move pretty quick to do that if we're going to meet the administration's goal of decarbonizing the transportation sector by 2050. And while that may seem like a long ways away, in looking at vehicles and how vehicles turn over, it really isn't. We really need to be developing these new technologies and having them on the street, if you will, by the early 2030s if we're going to make that goal. But these vehicles, they need to be accessible. They need to be affordable, especially as we look at battery charging for everything from passenger car vehicles to heavy-duty vehicles like school buses and transit buses, which, for those of you who might have been following the bipartisan infrastructure law, there's a tremendous amount of funding in there for those two areas. So we need to have the resiliency so that those systems work during any type of situation. But we also need to make sure that all of these transportation choices that are being adopted and coming onto the scene, whether it's ride sharing, car sharing, whatever the future of connected and autonomous vehicles becomes. How do we make these accessible to everyone? How do we make them affordable? And it's also important too, we're talking about buildings. We really work closely at DOE with our colleagues in the Building Technologies Office because we feel there's a real interaction between electrification of transportation and buildings. There's an opportunity to do things like on-site battery storage that can really help manage that load between the buildings and the vehicles that are charging there. So a lot of unique opportunities lay ahead of us. And the time is now to work on a lot of these. As was also mentioned, a couple of areas that are of interest to us at DOE is all around how do these technologies get into disadvantaged and underrepresented communities. That's part of the executive order that President Biden signed, the Justice 40 executive order. It says 40% of all federal resources need to address these communities. And we are working vigorously to make sure that happens, but that's very important that's part of it. There was also in one of the slides you may have seen about workforce development, and that is critical as well. How do we take today's auto mechanics and technicians and train them to work on these new vehicle technologies? But that gets to things even like tow truck operators and salvage yards and a wide variety of retraining that needs to take place for workforce development. So again, a lot of great opportunity we feel with this next round of Civic. It's great. I'm looking here. We have over 300 people on the webinar, so that says a lot that folks are that interested that on a Friday afternoon they're listening in. So we're excited for your proposals, excited to address any questions you have, and looking forward to all the good work that lies ahead. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Mark. And now I will finally introduce several NSF program directors who are part of the Civic team. We are joined by Barbara Ransom from the Geosciences Directorate, Yo-Yo Fan and Dan Liang from the Engineering Directorate, and Sarah Kiesler from the Social, Behavioral, and Economic Sciences Directorate. I will now pass it on to David Corman to kick off the Q&A session.
Thank you, Vishal. I just want to kick this off. I just wanted to say a few words first of all. So one, this is the second year we and our partners are supporting the Civic program. As a proposer, this should help you in that you can see what projects were funded in stage one and what are being currently funded in stage two. McCall mentioned during the webinar, look at the website, nsfcivicinnovation.org. And the good part of that is you can see the passion, the vision of the proposers that were selected in stage one. Look at those ideas. You can also see short write-ups on each of those funded projects, as well as the civic partners that are associated with them. One of the things about that, and I wanted to be very clear, is we're talking about civic partnerships, not just about community engagement. Partners can be from local government, municipal departments, small, large communities, large cities, rural regions. They could be from neighborhood organizations and NGOs. Civic is all about academia and civic partners working together to pilot projects that are important to the community. As we mentioned during the webinar, it's not just about pushing academic research over the fence. Just a couple other thoughts. One, we always tell people to do this. Very seldom do we actually believe people do. Read the solicitation carefully. It really does answer, and it really should answer virtually every question that you would have. When we put together the solicitation, we put it in the form of some questions that we think you should think about and answer as you put together your proposal. So look at the solicitation, make sure you see what questions we're asking, and let it help guide you as you write your proposal. Second, and McCall mentioned this, I know you guys all know submitting NSF proposals can be complex. We've used research.gov, people use grants.gov, I think we've used Fastlane. NSF program directors aren't submitting proposals. We're not the experts on the ins and outs of how to get your proposal submitted. There are some very good help desks and help information available at research.gov and grants.gov that can actually help guide you as you start your submittal. The other point is look at those now. Don't wait till a week before you're ready to submit and then you discover, I don't have the registration information. I don't have the specific user information required to be able to submit. By then it's going to be too late and you may not be able to submit. So look at those sites, look at information from the webinar and let it help guide you to make sure that it's an easy transition process for submitting your proposals. Thank you.
All right, thanks a lot, David. Folks, we'll get the Q&A session started now. We have quite a lot of questions that were asked. So as I mentioned earlier, we'll do our best to get through as many of them as possible. I also just want to let everyone know that there will be two more follow-up Q&A sessions on March 10th and March 22nd, and we encourage you to sign up for those on the Civic Program page. So we'll start at the Q&A now. So the first question we have, and I'll direct this towards you, Mikhail, is that is there an ideal scale for Civic funded projects? Is there an advantage to being in a small or large community?
Sure. So we really want the teams to make the case for your community size and the size of your project. So we will be, we fund across the different community sizes, rural to urban, different sizes of the populations that are impacted. What we want you to really think about is what is the number of people, the population, the number of residents, the size of your pilot that is required in order to help make the case for whatever you are trying to pilot. And you need to do that within the $1 million budget and the 12-month timeframe. So we leave that up to you to make the case for what that size is. And there's not an ideal size, but again, as we're gonna mention probably several times, you can see the sizes that were of the communities and the types of communities that were selected in the first round, which might give you an idea of the range of what was selected there.
The other thing you might think about is how whatever you're doing can scale to other communities outside of the one that you're piloting in, because that also could have a big impact on possible selection.
Thank you, Mikhail and Barbara. And the next question I will direct towards David Alexander. If you have a question that's asking, do projects responding to natural disasters apply to Track A living in a changing climate?
Short answer is yes. I mean, one of our views is that there are large swings in both in extreme heat events as well as other extreme weather events that relate to natural hazards. And so we see a logical intersection between hazards and climate resilience. But we're also interested in other effects of climate change, such as how it will exacerbate or modify human settlement and development. What is the tension between our natural, social, and physical systems? So the short answer is yes, we would look at those areas.
Thank you, David. The next question we have, I will direct that to Mark Smith. Mark, can you expand on what type of resources, services, and community needs Track B seeks to address?
Sure, thank you. I think we're looking at everything, much like in the first iteration of Civic, it was really about accessibility, and that's to jobs, mobility services that can get people to jobs, to school, to healthcare, to the grocery stores. So it involves, all segments of transportation and all types of mobility too. If there are, micro built mobility options or those types of choices that can help bridge some of those gaps, those are the things we're looking for. It's really an open book, anything to do with mobility, transportation, and accessibility to any type of service.
Thank you, Mark. Next question I will direct to David Corman. David, we have a question that's asking, can we submit a proposal with multiple communities from across the nation?
The answer to that is sure. The whole point is we want to make sure that you have a good focus and that those communities really represent partnerships. So we put in the solicitation, you can provide us up to a 2-page letter of collaboration from your community partners. And in your facilities section, you can describe the extent of that collaboration further, specific roles and responsibilities. Other point, these are planning grants. They're not a lot of money. They're $50,000, but community partners can get paid. They do work.
All right, thank you, David. Kind of along the lines of, questions about community partnerships. Next question I'll direct towards Mikal. We have a question that's asking, should the relationships between academic and civic partners already be firmly established prior to submitting the proposal? Mikal, you're on mute.
Thank you. So it's not a requirement that those relationships are established. You don't have to check a box to show that, but you do in your proposal, it's going to be to your benefit that you have those at least pretty established. Part of what you want to do in your proposal is describe for the reviewers what the strength of your partnership is, why have you chosen to work together, showing that this is really a challenge that is being brought forward from your community partners. And you may want to show that you've worked together before. You have only the 6-month period to really do the planning, and that's really about building additional capacity and refining what your pilot would look like. So you don't want to be, the goal here in this program is not to spend that time really solidifying the partnerships. And we're hoping that these projects are coming in pretty strong to start off with, and a lot of the competitive ones from our first round of the program. These partnerships were very strong, and it comes across clearly in the proposals if they are.
Next one is kind of a follow-up on that, Mikal. So I'll just ask you this one too. Are local government agencies qualified to be civic partners, or are civic partners meant to be local community-based organizations?
Local government can definitely be community, it can be the civic partners, it can be either one of those.
So the next question I'll ask you, David, how does NSF define community?
So a community is a location, it's a place. So it could be a city, a town, it could be a county, it could be a large neighborhood. For example, in New York City, we have one of our projects dealing with flood insurance. It's a large neighborhood with a very strong civic organization representing that neighborhood. It could be a group of farms in an area. So it's meant to really represent a location with people in it and community partners that can help support the creation of the idea as well as the piloting of the project within that area.
Thank you, David. The next question I'm going to direct at Kate Burns from MetroLab. Kate, we have a question that's asking, I'm at a university. What are some mechanisms you would suggest to start developing the strong partnerships necessary for this call for proposals?
I would suggest, usually universities have some outreach offices that are central, as often these efforts might be siloed within departments. So going to a central office would be a good place to start for what relationships currently exist with your university that you might not be aware of. I would also reach out to your local government, even if they may not be a part of your project, they would certainly know who to connect you with in your community, whether nonprofits or other organizations, as a place to start. Just some ideas there.
Thank you, Kate. Next question, Nicole, I'll direct this towards you. Who should serve as the PI or co-PI? Can or should it be the civic partner or the government entity? Can the PI be a grad student, postdoc, or university staff? Are any nonprofits eligible to submit or only those listed in solicitation?
So as we state in the solicitation, the proposals can be submitted by someone from an institution of higher education or from a nonprofit organization. So you are welcome to have your PI and co-PI from those locations. So the local government can actually also be co-PIs, and it's, you know, whether they can receive subawards is up to that, up to the local government if it's allowed by them. And the other part of the question, so the other thing that I wanted to mention is that if you do submit from a nonprofit organization, we've said this a couple times, just be aware that if you have not previously submitted to NSF, this really can take a long time. You pretty much want to start thinking about this now. This can take easily 2 months. So if you have not submitted before, then start looking into that now. Otherwise, you may want to go have your lead be at the university, even though the other partners from local government and the community organizations are expected to be equally important and impactful in these projects.
Thank you, Michal.
So Michal, I wanted to also add one other thing there is, and this relates to make your decision, one, based on being able to submit the proposal. One of the challenges is sometimes as a co-PI, there are certain requirements that you may need to fulfill, including getting specific user information, user registration information. What we look for is not necessarily, are they co-PIs or senior persons, but really, what is the commitment? What is the specific role that they are going to be playing in the project, rather than, hey, if it's a co-PI, that's where they gotta be. So make sure you look and are informed by what has to be submitted in order for them to have that role.
Thank you, David and Michal. David, I'll stay with you for the next question. The next question is asking, there's a down selection between, or in the first iteration of Civic, there was a down selection between 52 awards down to 17 in stage two. So what is the criteria for a team to get into stage two?
So there was obviously each proposal, each of the stage one people, the 52 awards, at the end of stage one, had submitted a proposal for the stage two element of competition. It's a full up NSF proposal. We went through the NSF merit review process, looked and evaluated proposals based on intellectual merit, broader impact, solicitation-specific criteria. And then we have essentially how much money, what's our total funding that's available. And we ended up with 17 out of 52 awards that were made. Now, may also say that for NSF proposals, for NSF solicitations, 33% is really an outstanding odds. So the if you get in, the idea is you got into stage from going, if you're into stage one, we try to give you a good opportunity to shine through your proposal, through the performance you demonstrated in stage one, to help make it easy to make those decisions for stage two.
Thank you, David. Next question I will direct towards Kate from MetroLab again. How can an interested community group find a research team that can partner on an issue?
I think that's a great question. Typically, you would go into your backyard, whatever institution might be there, whether it's a community college or research university. Like I said, they have outreach departments there, organizations. I think also, if there's questions, who might be good to contact, the MetroLab network does have many universities in our network and could maybe advise where, what office could be best appropriate, but that would be the best place to start.
Thank you, Kate. Next question I will direct to Yo-Yo Fan. Yo-Yo, we have a question that's asking, for this grant, is innovation viewed primarily through a technological lens, or do innovations in processes also fall within scope?
We're not limited to technology innovation. In fact, the civic team has taken a very broad perspective. And then if there are innovative procedures or processes that could actually advance through the pipeline of thinking, creating more equitable and accessible services to reach underserved communities, for example, those are all considered as innovation. So it's not limited to technologies.
Thank you. I'm going to ask the same question to you, Barbara, and also Sarah. Barbara, we'll start with you because I think it's good to get the perspective of all, you know, the different directorates that are participating in here on this.
Yeah, I agree completely with Yo-Yo up on this, in that those are really the kinds of elements that we are looking for. It's more than just developing a piece of software, let's say, or some kind of technology that partners could use. It really does involve a lot more than those kinds of activities. It can be involved with things to do with the environment that's right around that area and how to make it work better for the communities. So, anything is game that you can justify in terms of the requirements of the solicitation.
Thank you, Barbara. Sarah, do you have thoughts to share as well?
I would say that usually there's some sort of technological or technical changes that need to be made along with changes in process. If you just look at his history, the invention of the assembly line also included changes in how cars were put together. So sometimes the stronger proposals think about and have collaborations with experts on both sides, on the technical side and the social science or organization side or policy side. So think about what would need to happen to make it useful for communities and a real improvement, and what would be really innovative, and also how you would evaluate if it were successful. Because it's one thing to say, you know, my machine works, doesn't break down. It's another thing to say the community is better off.
All right, thank you, everyone. The next question I will direct to Michal. Michal, we have a question that's asking, do you expect our projects to include participation of private enterprise? Are there limitations on participation of private enterprises as part of our projects?
Sure. So there's not a requirement for participation of private companies. It is something that is allowed. They cannot serve as the lead. They can receive subawards, or they can just participate as a partner without receiving a subaward. One piece to consider is that the long-term sustainability of whatever is being piloted is a piece that we really want to see in these projects, the scaling, transferring, the financial sustainability. And so thinking about what that business model is in some cases may involve private companies.
Thank you, Michal. Next question I will direct to David Corman. David, we have a question that's asking, in the solicitation, you reference cost sharing. What does inclusion of voluntary committed cost sharing is prohibited mean?
So what we're saying is we do not want to see, I am proposing an explicit cost share of $100,000 for this project or $50,000. We do not require cost match. There are some questions about that I saw. And that's basically what we're saying. There is no explicit, we do not want to see explicitly a cost match for the project.
Yeah, really the way we think about this is when you propose the project, you need to put all the costs associated with the project into your budget. You can't have hidden resources that are going to be brought to bear that are not paid for by the project. So that's kind of what we consider when we look at these things.
Let me also add one thing. Some of the civic partners may not be able to accept funds. That's not considered a cost match.
All right. Thank you, Barbara and David. David, I'll stay with you for the next question since it's also kind of a definitional question. So what is the definition of academic organization? Is it just universities or also not-for-profit research and evaluation organizations?
It can be both. So it's could be two-year colleges, four-year colleges. It could be research organizations associated with a nonprofit. And the main point is that, and one point that I would make explicit is that an FFRDC, federally funded R&D center, cannot serve as the lead organization for a proposal submittal. They can potentially be a subawardee.
I'm going to ask you the next one too, David, and I think it will be good to get perspective from Mark Smith and David Alexander on this as well. So the next question is kind of similar to an earlier question. So what are the expected deliverables from a competitive stage two project? What will be considered within scope? Is a data-driven research project possible, or does this also include intervention-based projects?
I think the answer to that is it could be either. And what we want to hear from you is something that really does define what your vision is in stage one, and in a stage two proposal, something that makes very explicit what that vision is in terms of a pilot project that will impact the community.
Mark, do you want to come on screen and?
Yeah, I would agree wholeheartedly with David's answer. Yeah, it can be either or, it can be both. And I think back to something David Corman said when we were doing Q&As for the first iteration of Civic a couple years ago. And that is, tell us a story. Tell us a good story about, you know, what your idea is, how, you know, how it's going to meet some of the suggestions that have been made. And again, whether that's a data-driven project, it's data-driven with some validation or modeling that happens. Yeah, tell us a story about it. But I think, yeah, it's, you know, think of it as kind of a blank page at this point.
And David Alexander?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with both Mark and Dave. I think the answer is it could be both. I think we've designed Civic to really foster creativity and stimulate innovation. And that can come in a variety of forms. We're really interested in how you tell your story, how you're proposing, articulating what it is that you want to achieve, and what kind of outcomes and impacts will it deliver for your community partner.
The next question I will stay with you, David Alexander. Are wildfires part of Track A, the living in a changing climate track?
So we consider that that track to include really looking at both chronic and stresses as well as it could be catastrophic. It all goes down to being able to articulate the challenge or the issue that you're addressing and its relationship to climate risk. And that could look at cascading effects of climate change posed by changes in global weather patterns. It could be related to implications of sea level rise. It could be how those impact local core services, how they may threaten your supply chains, what are the implications to public safety in your community. So we're really being a little fairly open on that topic, but it is key that you should be articulating how this will enhance climate resilience with your community partner, as well as how it will address factors or impacts from climate change.
Thank you, David. Next question I'll direct towards Michal. Michal, do teams have to include a government body?
No, they do not have to. They can. You just have to define who your civic partner is. So as we've said, it can be someone in government, it can be from a community organization.
Okay. Short and clear. Next question I'll direct towards David Corman. David, we have a question that's asking, the timeline says that stage one will end after the proposal due date for stage two. Can you expand on this?
So I guess I'm confused by that question. It may be was that from the webinar?
I believe that's from, it's an audience question, yes.
No, I mean so stage one begins with proposals that are due May 5th, 2022. We anticipate making awards for stage one in approximately October, for a start of about October 1st. Stage two proposals are due, I believe the date from the solicitation is early February. And stage two decisions will be made sometime towards the end of that fiscal year, perhaps a little earlier. And stage two execution will be 12 months once those projects have begun.
I think the question that the audience was asking is that if there seems to be an overlap between when stage one projects will be active and when they have to submit their stage two proposal. So there's a little bit of overlap.
There is a little overlap. And, you know, frankly, what we wanted to do was make sure that your actions in stage one are really to prepare you to write a great story for a stage two proposal. So our goal is, hey, do that while you're actually executing your stage one. Towards the end, where you've got most of your results, you've firmed up your partnership, you've firmed up your research, your vision, and your plan for your pilot, and submit that to us in February, which is, I think, four or five months after the start of stage one.
Thank you, David. Next question I'll direct towards Michal. Michal, we have a question, and David, you can chime in on this one too. We have a question that's asking, what is the difference between the Civic Innovation Challenge and NSF's other program, Smart and Connected Communities?
Sure, okay, so I'll get us started on that. So I'd say probably the biggest difference has to do with the impact time horizon. So in Smart and Connected Communities, we're probably looking at projects that might have an impact in 5 to 10 years from now, whereas in the Civic Innovation Challenge, it's maybe about 1 to 2 years. So one of the things to think about is if there's still a need for quite a bit of foundational research, the social side, technical side, before you can actually do some kind of piloting or some kind of transition to practice, then Smart and Connected Communities is going to be a good program for you. And that program, we have both planning grants, and then we also have full awards, but the full award length of time is either is 3 or 4 years. Whereas in the Civic Innovation Challenge, we're really looking for projects that are ready to do that transition to practice now. So your partnerships are much more solidified. You've probably tested something out in a program such as Smart and Connected Communities or other ones across NSF or across the government or elsewhere. And you're really ready to, you're almost ready to implement something. And then the awards are, of course, smaller. Another difference is that in Smart and Connected Communities, you can choose any range of topics that you would like to, anything that's really relevant to communities. Whereas here, we really focus on two tracks. And our goal here is really the aim of that is to start building a community of practice of communities across the country that are facing similar challenges and would really benefit speaking with each other and learning from each other. And we have these interesting opportunities for the teams to connect with each other. So I'll stop there and see if David wants to add more.
That was a great answer. All I would add is, if you're looking to do foundational research, look at the Smart and Connected Community Program. If you've achieved many of the research aims already and have a pilot that can be built fairly rapidly, can be transitioned to practice from a Smart and Connected Community project from somewhere else, that's really the home for the Civic Innovation Challenge.
All right, thank you, David and Michal. And David, I'll stay with you for the next question that we have. This question is asking, can partners be funded under NSF grants? Are they required to be funded? If not, what incentives can they be offered?
So civic partners can be funded under the Civic Innovation Program. So they can be funded under the planning grant for stage one and can receive funds for during stage two. If you look at the assortment of projects that we have in ongoing Civic 1.0, many of those civic partners are getting significant funding as part of their project. And sometimes, unfortunately, the civic partner can't accept the funds, but is doing that as part of their normal work activity. Also totally acceptable.
Nice. Thanks, David. Next question I'll direct towards Yo-Yo. Yo-Yo, we have a question that's asking, can our projects focus on utilizing startup solutions that already exist? Or is it required that we have to create something new?
Yeah, I think I answered that question by typing, through typing, but I'll elaborate a little bit more. The earlier Mikhail explained the different expectation for civic versus general as an CC solicitation. Because the time duration for making impact through civic projects is short. So we're actually not looking for research ideas starting from the very beginning and building foundation. That means you almost should have most of the fundamental challenges figured out. So startup solutions is actually possible. Good starting point for civic deployment pilot project. And if you can identify clearly what are the challenges involved in pushing the startup solutions further to make more scalable, transformed to other communities, make more impacts to broader communities, and then focus on those challenges in the civic project, that would be great.
Thank you, Yo-Yo. Next question I'll ask David Corman. David, are any nonprofits eligible to submit? And are national labs able to receive funds as a partner under the solicitation?
So NGOs, nonprofits can't submit proposals to the solicitation. Can national labs? So national lab cannot lead a proposal, but it can be a subawardee on another, on with someone else in the lead.
Thank you, David. Next question I'll direct towards Barbara. Barbara, we have a question that's asking, are the community and university partners expected to be already working on the vision and research questions described in the stage one proposal? Or is it okay for the planning grant we received to kickstart our work together?
For Civic, because the time frame is so short, this is really about transitioning to practice right away from things that you've already created. Now, the thing is that yes, there may be aspects of it that still need to be worked out, but for the most part, the projects that you're going to be transitioning to practice should be pretty much ready to roll to help to ameliorate that community need. But I'll turn this over to Mikhail also to see if she has some comments on that.
I actually agree with Barbara. I think that's right. Having a solid partnership is really beneficial, and that certainly will help you in the review process. It can be something new, but there's definitely no downside in having something that's established. In fact, it's probably beneficial.
Now, you know, one point though is that relationship can exist. It may need some strengthening and refinement, but we're not looking for a relationship that is totally new as part of the program. Those are tough to create in 6 months. Tough to build the trust.
And also the technology or the innovation that you're going to deliver to the community should also be something that's pretty much ready to go. Like I say, you know, there can be things that you need to adjust on the sides, but to start a civic maybe by creating something completely from scratch, you probably can't make that 1 year deadline to actually deliver. So you need to really think about that.
Okay, following along those lines, we have a question that's asking, can a government entity be the lead applicant?
Okay, I'll answer that. No, they cannot. The lead applicant needs to be from an institution of higher education or from a nonprofit organization. And that's outlined in the solicitation.
Next question I'll direct to Kate from MetroLab. Kate, we have a question that's asking, does Civic provide any kind of matchmaking service to help a civic organization with identified problems, advertise their challenges to attract ideas from potential university partners?
Once you're in stage one, MetroLab works with the teams to have some curriculum that teaches you about working with partners and working with data and getting ready for stage two to implement. So it's really, the support is to inform all of the stage one awardees that would then likely go and do that themselves and advertise what's needed. That should also likely probably be in the proposal as well for as you're getting ready for communication.
Thanks, Kate. Next question I'll ask Sarah. Sarah, we have a question that's asking, does our organization's operational budget size play a factor into your review selection process?
Well, I'm not sure I'm the right person to answer this, but I think that reviewers look at the budget to see if it seems reasonable for what you want to do. And, if you suddenly have, 12 trips to Bali, I think, there would be questions. So you have to justify in your budget justification, you have to justify your budget. So I don't know otherwise how to answer that question.
Yeah, I would say come in with a budget that responds to the scope and whatever it is you're planning to do and distribute the funds accordingly so that when reviewers in the program take a look at and have to evaluate your proposal, it looks like the money is in the right place to do what you're proposing to do. So some institutions are going to require more money than others. Some institutions have higher overhead than others. So I don't think we really look at that to any great extent. As long as it's well justified and it looks like you can do what you're promising to do.
Thank you, Sarah and Barbara. Next question I'll direct to David Corman. We have a question that's asking, results from prior NSF support is a required section in the NSF PAPPG. If we don't have past NSF awards, person is asking, I'm assuming we can skip this in our project description. Is this a weakness?
You need to actually have a small section that says, results from prior NSF and essentially say we don't have prior NSF awards. So the section needs to be there, but it's two lines.
There's a follow-up to this, which is asking if you don't have prior NSF support, is this considered a weakness? Although even if the PI or the team has other federal funding through NIH, AHRQ, et cetera.
No, it's not viewed as a weakness. Main issue is that if you do have, what it allows us to look at is we've done X, which is similar to it. It adds a low credibility, but that information about your NIH or DOE or other active support could be in your project description already.
Thank you, David.
And yes, not everybody has had an NSF award. And probably quite a number of you on this webinar maybe have never been funded by NSF. And that is not a detriment to your submission of a proposal. You need to just demonstrate that you have the tools and the talent to carry out whatever you think you are going to be doing. And that's what we look at, okay? Because many people have never had an NSF award. We want to encourage those kinds of people to come to NSF and give us their best ideas. So that's really what we're looking for here, not whether you have a track record with us or not.
All right, thank you, David and Barbara. Next question I'll direct towards Mikhail. We have a question asking, can the community partners and research institutions with prior collaboration be in separate geographical areas, for example, not in the same state?
So the short answer is yes. But the follow-on to that is that, as you would probably expect, the reviewers, the first question they're going to ask when they notice this is the collaboration strong enough to accomplish the goals? So if you're going to do that, then make sure that you have it very well justified and how your geographical barriers are not going to impact your project. And keep in mind that for the most part, they are going to be in the same geographical area. So just consider that.
Thank you, Mikhail. The next question I will direct towards Dan and Yo-Yo, and as well as David Alexander. So maybe Dan and Yo-Yo, you can take the first shot at this one. Do supply chain management challenges fall under track A?
And then you can chime in. Yes, actually, supply chain related challenges could fall in both tracks. And it really depends on which aspects that you are aiming at.
One point I want to add is that you have to basically identify the community aspect of your project. I think David Corman mentioned at the beginning that, you know, the communities is more place-based. So either a neighborhood or could be a, you know, city or could be a region. So if it's a supply chain related issues, you still have to, you know, identify who those civic partners are and how they will benefit from your effort.
Yeah.
As an example, if the emphasis is more on the resilience of food supply chain, right, under extreme conditions or under unexpected disruptions, that could fall in track A. But if it's more on the delivery service to underserved communities, making sure those communities could have convenient access to foods, that might be more suitable for a second track. That's, you know, that's what we mean. Really depends on what aspects that you are addressing.
David Alexander, do you also want to chime in on this question?
No, I agree. I mean, I probably couldn't say it any better, but yeah, I think fundamentally you need to articulate how it relates to a community, and then what is the context? Is it going to relate to some kind of climate or resilience issue, or is it relating to some core services or accessibility issue at the community level?
Thank you, everyone. Next question I will direct towards David Corman. David, can a for-profit organization be the sub-awardee or a co-PI?
It can certainly be a sub-awardee, which also means they can be a co-PI.
And kind of following up on that, if the proposal partners include a for-profit company, is it acceptable that the research that comes out of the civic grant inform the product offered by the for-profit company?
So the question there is, you have to think about that in terms of how is the community benefiting from it? So yes, the answer, yes, that could benefit the private company. It could support sustainability and transferability across communities, but you are the ones that need to make that story.
All right, thank you, David. Next question, I will direct towards Michal. Our community partners are not well, this is from the audience. They're asking, our community partners are not well funded. If this is a pilot and then a 1 year of funding in part two, what kind of sustainability is required after the funding period?
Right, so that's a really good question. So this is really one of the risks that we recognize in this kind of program, because we don't want teams to be going into a community and then carrying out some really great work and then it just being left there. So that's actually why a big, an important piece of what we look for in our selection process is if the team has considered the sustainability beyond this 1 year funding. We really want you to be thinking about the full award funding, that $1 million as essentially seed funding, and be thinking really from the onset of what comes next. And one of the ways that we go about that in this program is asking you to include as part of your project team, whether or not they're actually a subawardee, they can just be a partner, the relevant people who are needed, who, if the project is successful, who are those champions going to be, or what is that business model going to be that will carry this beyond that 1 year? So this may be people in local government. You may be thinking about how do you get funds from local funding, county, state, and include the right peoples in there, your champions that way. You could be thinking about bringing in a for-profit organization, you know, creating a startup. So anything like that, the funding will not come directly through NSF, but we encourage teams to think about that. And that's part of the community of practice. And it's also part of what you will be evaluated on in the proposal selection process.
All right. For this next question, I'll stay with you, Michal, but I also think it would be good to hear from other members of the Civic Program team on this one. This is a really good question. I think really important to, about what the program is really about. Could you elaborate more about what type of roles the civic partners should play? Any example would be helpful, you know, whether it's helping with implementation, testing, et cetera.
Right, so that's gonna really be different in every project. The piece that we really want at the onset is that the civic partner is actually helping to inform the question that's being asked, and that you're not proposing a solution that is being pushed from academia, but that civic partner, the community partners, are actually saying this is the kind of solution that we want to test out in our community. And then after that, I mean, it could be a whole range of things. They could be providing access, if it's local government, it could be maybe a transit agency and you're working with them and they're providing access in that way. Maybe I'll let others step in and give some other examples.
So clearly a community partner can get involved in the integration of that pilot within the actual community, hooking up to specific community services. It can get involved in work both up through, if it's a government, from one department to another or to the mayor or city council. And it can get down from the department down to the individual citizens in the community.
Yeah, if I could just say something, this is really about co-design of projects that will allow communities to move towards resilience. So you have to be not only the expert in the room, but the best listener in the room. These projects are actually led by the communities, and you are there to help them facilitate the solutions that they feel will work because they know their constituents, they know the lay of the land, and they know the kinds of resources that they have. It's not for you to step in and say, this is your solution. It's to really work with them closely to have something that can actually be implemented at their level with what they own.
Okay, thank you.
Vishal, if I could add something real quick too, I think.
Yes, definitely.
Something to consider too, love Barb's answers to all of that. Also, making sure there's an equitable outreach to the community is really key here. And the stakeholders that you involve, that would really help with the race and social justice equity initiatives within your project. And also making sure the assumptions that are being made in the project of what might be a problem or a solution to a problem is true, and providing some ground truthing to that community.
I think these are all great responses. I would also just like to direct everyone to our civic website, nsfcivicinnovation.org. You should check out what teams did in the first iteration of the program to kind of get a breadth of the kinds of partnerships that were involved, what those partners are contributing to the projects. I think that should give people a good idea of what kind of role civic partners can play as well. We're approaching the end of our webinar. I think we didn't get a chance to get through all of the questions. We did get a lot of them. So if we did not have a chance to answer your questions today, I encourage you to reach out to us at civic@nsf.gov. You can also join the two Q&A sessions that are coming up on March 10th and March 22nd. The registration links for both sessions are available on the NSF Civic Program page, as well as on the Civic website that I mentioned earlier. And with that, we've reached 3 p.m., which brings us to the conclusion of the webinar today.